mandated biological opinions, and that West Haden Island is linked to the Columbia River biop. What do we know about this, and how would it relate to our question here?
Are you asking about what the opportunities are for restoration on West Haden Island?
How does it figure into the litigation and the federal requirements for salmon restoration?
If I understand your question, I think that what it means is that obviously any kind of proposal that moves forward with a specific development proposal is going to be looked at with a pretty rigorous lens under the ESA as federal agencies consult. That would also be brought to bear if there's any public money involved, which would also force consultation at that level. In terms of the 500 acres, I think it is assumed that part of our look in these next steps would be to examine the different potential for restoration. There's a lot of different entities interested in restoration on West Haden Island, including Superfund issues on the Willamette as well, and that site's been looked at in terms of a potential to do remediation related to remedying past damage on the Willamette. So
let's not forget the BPA.
Right, and so there's a variety of entities that would be interested in restoration opportunities on West Haden Island.
Commissioner Fish?
I know, Mayor, the hour is late, but it has been really an incredibly informative hearing so far. And I think I speak for all my colleagues because we received hundreds of emails and letters prior to this hearing. And in the course of this hearing, people have raised interesting new issues or illuminated. So I want to thank everyone for their time and patience. Bill, again, in deference to the hour, I'm going to ask you just a few short answer questions. And if you can't give me a short answer, I'll let the audience. We'll throw you off the island, so to speak. But the
I was waiting for that.
But if it does require a longer answer, I would welcome a subsequent email or something. First question is sort of an offshoot of what you've already discussed with my colleagues, which is, if we were to proceed to the next level here, and if somewhere down the road there were to be some development, I think you've been very clear that there's nothing that says that this would be more likely a grain export use versus automobile or anything else. It would be driven by the market and circumstances, but it may very well be a soybean export area just as much as it could be some other commodity. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Could you just clarify for me, under the most optimistic projections about our economy and about your business, again, if you do get the authorization you're seeking down the road, when is the earliest this would be a functioning industrial development?
Approximately 10 years.
Okay. The amended resolution tightens up the notion of a hard cap of 300 acres on the footprint, and as I understand it, it would include the infrastructure build out. Now, that's one of the reasons I asked our friend from the Vancouver port about the experience at Terminal 5. But I guess, do you believe that hard cap makes it difficult, if not impossible, to come up with a viable use for that site, or do you feel confident that you could operate within that 300-acre footprint?
I guess I would say this. It makes it more difficult rather than less difficult. And there are two pieces to this. One is the on-site or on-terminal infrastructure. If it's a loop track, 2, 3, 4 loops, whatever, that can fit. It's the ancillary track in order to exit the train from the bridge, which is the main line of the Burlington Northern Railroad. And so they want the train off the main line as quickly as possible. Being able to do that, get it onto the terminal, and then actually unloading its cargo, for example, if it's export, is more of a question of geometry, physics, and engineering than it is land use. And so I really can't tell you the answer to that question specifically. It does, it's challenging.
But do you believe it's potentially doable?
I think it's potentially doable. And you've given us incentive to find out.
And finally, the number of people who are opposed or skeptical about the proposed marine industrial use have referred to the opportunity around the natural area on West Hayden Island as a legacy piece for the city. Mm-hmm. And in fact, we do step back and we look at Forest Park and Smith and Bybee and we go around the horn. It is a unique property and with unique characteristics for habitat and other goals. In the event the council decides to go forward with some kind of accommodation between the two uses, is the port open to a conversation about a change in ownership at some point, whether it would be regional ownership, city ownership, or a consortium of environmental groups or something else with respect to the area that's set aside as a natural area?
I think, you know, the answer that I would give you is this. We would be open to that discussion. We will have obligations ourselves, as will you, for mitigating. It's a time question for mitigating the natural resource damages associated with the lower Willamette. And by the way, mitigating for the development on West Hayden Island itself. And so we want to be able to fulfill those mitigation obligations. We don't have any genetic constitutional predisposition to owning open space, although I would also say this. The Port of Portland owns and operates more mitigation sites in this area than any other public or private entity quite successfully. So we're prepared to, we're equipped to, we don't have to, and we would gladly entertain discussions around this.
And my final question, and I thank the mayor for his indulgence, has to do with the ongoing challenge we have in our community, which is how we maintain our natural areas. And in the period of a little over a year as I've been the Parks Commissioner, I've been dealing with this in places like Forest Park, which 5,000 acres, which yeah. According to City Club, we haven't been doing a great job for some time maintaining and on and on. So the maintenance, the operations and maintenance piece has been a challenge. Metro has talked about potentially at some point seeking a regional funding source for that. But one of the things we have to be thinking about is, can we on a case-by-case basis, when we create new natural area or open space, can we create a revenue source that accompanies that designation? And Smith and Bybee, I understand, when it went to Metro, came with an endowment. And I guess the question to you is, are you willing to work with us creatively to find a revenue source that allows us to maintain whatever portion of the island is designated as?
I like how he lures you in.
Oh yeah, no, I've been waiting for this. Yeah,
just go ahead and say yes. Just say yes.
I've been watching Steve Janik, so I'm picking up some pointers. But I think it's a fair question.
I think, yeah, of course, we are willing to work with you. I would say that we're going to spend a lot of time together as partners in the lower Willamette cleanup, because we're both major responsible parties with big obligations. And I think there are opportunities to address that, particularly at West Hayden Island, in a way that might not be so for Forest Park.
Thank you.
Yeah. Chair Squire, in listening to the testimony tonight, are there any comments that you'd like to make, any observations, anything that you felt on both or the many sides of this issue was especially off from your point of view based on the work that you've done? I want to make sure that we honor the significant investment of time that your group, which you chaired, put into this.
I'd love to say I have 20 points. I really don't. Most of the comments this evening are things that did come before us, either from members or from the public. And I think that the one thing that I made a check mark beside was a commenter who pointed out that the reduced acreage that your resolution is talking about means that there may be alternative ways to meet the, or alternative sites, to meet the need that the port is putting forward. That's not something we looked at because we did not have the luxury of being able to consider 300 acres as a sustainable port development. And one of our principles was we did not want an unsustainable natural area and we did not want an unsustainable economic development. So that's the one point that came out to me.
Mr. Engstrom, are there any issues that were raised that, you know, just so for the benefit of informed discussion and from staff, leading the staff team that's been working on this for years, anything that jumps out that you would want to comment on?
There were a number of references to different job numbers that might be worth noting. A few people mentioned only a few hundred, and a few people mentioned thousands, and a few people mentioned four jobs per acre, and others mentioned more. We looked at jobs in terms of the three categories, the direct on-site jobs, the indirect jobs, which would be companies that directly serve that facility but aren't necessarily located there. And then there's the another category, which is the jobs that serve all those people that may not have that business if it wasn't for all those other people and being employed. So in other words, the restaurants that the longshoremen go to or with their salaries. So you can break it down into those kind of three categories. And the four jobs per acre is the direct jobs. The 12 jobs per acre is including all those categories. The number came from a study of the existing port facilities and what that generates. And so it's an average. So of course it's not going to, depending on the specific facility type we locate there, it's not going to be exactly that number ever, but that's based on research of who works and who is serving the existing port facilities and the acreage that that provides.
Okay. Thank you all very much. Appreciate it. Is there anyone who has a comment to make that has a comment or question or issue that has not been raised thus far? Okay. We're going to take you and the two in the back, and then we'll take the three here.
Yep.
And then I'm going to... Okay. All right. We got a few more. As you wait there, think how to say what you have to say in 30 seconds.
I'm Jeff Smith, president
Thank you, Jeff,
of...
thanks for your testimony.
Jeff Smith, president of the International Longshore Warehouse Union, Local 8. I was here prepared to say my three-minute speech, got it down to two, and then now it's 30 seconds. I want to thank the community working group that has spent the last 18 months doing this study. They put in a lot of time to bring forth here tonight. I want to thank the mayor and the commissioners for sitting here listening to us tonight. I know you guys heard both sides. Jobs are at stake for my union, okay? And that means a lot. The previous speaker just said something about spending money in restaurants. My members spend a lot of money at Jansen Beach. And the more jobs on Hayden Island means more money spent at Jansen Beach. So there's all kinds of places where the job creation can go and make other things down the road better. So please, we're asking for your support. Thank you, sir.
Hi, thanks for waiting.
Hi, I'm Capra Geneva. I'm a former port employee who worked on the marketing piece that promoted the West Hayden Island project. I'm fascinated by infrastructure. I believe it can be developed sustainably, and I don't believe that this is a development that should occur. in part because the port tried to obscure the real environmental impact of their proposed project by underreporting and undermitigating the wetlands affected by in-water construction. As an example of the port's tactics, their wetlands mitigation plan, when I worked on the project, which was 10 years ago, did not even contain the minimum legal requirement for the amount of wetlands they were claiming to affect, which at the time was 22 acres. Let's explore one aspect of this, Benson Pond. The part of the pond that they claimed to affect was only exact footprint of the piling of the railroad bridge planned to cross the pond. In actual fact, when you do in-water construction in a pond, it affects the entire pond. If you cement over half a wetland, it affects the entire wetland, and they were only claiming the parts where there was cement. Birds and other creatures continue to be affected by the noise and vibration of railroad cars passing over the remaining pond that, according to the port's calculations, was unaffected. The actual amount of wetlands affected by their plan was closer to 36 acres. I have other things to say, but I'll limit my comments to that.
I appreciate your concrete example. Did you have something in writing you could give to the council clerk? That would be great.
I've got a lot of notes on it, but yes.
Oh, okay. Or you can email to us later. Thank you, sir, for waiting.
Hi, I'm Dave Beckett. I'm president of Three Rivers Land Conservancy, which is now combining with Columbia Land Trust. But let's remember, and I live in the metro area, let's remember that the public spoke very clearly in 2006. They voted $227 million to Metro for the acquisition, preservation, and restoration of green space and natural areas. Quite a bit of acreage has been very well managed by Metro. Let's not undo that. Let's look at supporting the will of the people.
I think you made your point very well.
Okay.
And you paused right at 30 seconds, so I want to congratulate you. Sir.
Hello, I'm Martin Larson. I work for the International Transport Workers Federation. It's a global union based in London. 751 international unions, 4.6 million union families. I go on board vessels as they come in the Columbia River. I inspect these vessels in regards to international law regarding working conditions, human rights violations on these vessels. I don't think people here are touching on the point that this is a global concern. The vessels coming into this port come here because of the infrastructure. They come here, 43% of the wheat grown in the United States comes down the Columbia River. That supply chain is affected by the infrastructure that's at this port. That's why this port is more competitive than the other ports, be it LA or here. It just we're further inland. My other hat that I wear is that this has been my backyard for the last 58 years. For the last 40 years, my family's owned the marina where Ann Squires lives. This is my backyard. If you look at historic photos, this property for the last 100 years has been into heavy industrial use. It's been into the logging industry. In 1972, the logs stored on this island was the largest export of logs in the United States.
Thank you for your testimony.
And I just want to comment, Capra, thank you for sending your email in advance. And some of my amendments, I think, cover your concerns.
If I could just say one more thing.
You can't. I'm sorry, because there are people that have their hands up behind you, and it's 9:30. But thank you, Sam, and Joe, and Barbara, and a gentleman with the... Yes. Can't see the print on your T-shirt. Ah, fish. About to swallow your head. Okay. Barbara, I'm going to ask that you begin.
Thank you. Barbara Quinn of Friends of Cathedral Park Neighborhood Association. I'm here as an individual. North Portland neighbors need to be involved in the discussion of the industrial development of West Hayden Island because it could conceivably have an impact on our neighborhood as far as trucks and rail traffic. The degree of impact is unknown at this point since we don't know what's going in. And we are already heavily affected by industrial conflicts, both odor, noise, truck, and rail, which have been largely overlooked at this point. So,
good point. That's a new point, and so noted. Joe?
Joe Resman, member of the IBW. I'll be speaking tonight for the Columbia Pacific Building Trades, 18,000 men and women and their families here in the metro area. We are in support of the plan, 500 for habitat and 300 for industrial. I think this sends a message to the rest of the country and world that Portland is open for business, and that's a good thing.
Thank you, Joe. Sam?
I'm Sam Gillespie. I'm with UFCW Local 555, and I just want to offer up a little different perspective. I'm on the North Clackamas School Board. I've been on that school board for 16 years. Last year, we cut 160 positions. This year, we cut 102. In the state of Oregon, we have to have a balanced budget, just like you do at the city of Portland. What I'm telling you is we've been on the school board, and school boards all across the state have had to make painful decisions. Why? Because what everyone's talking about and everybody realizes, the economy's in the dumps. So what we have to do is you've got to give us, you have an opportunity here as a city council to create some jobs through all of the things. You've put a lot of amendments in that are very good about balancing the environmental needs and the jobs. So I'm asking you to compromise, look real hard at that, help get some jobs done so that we and those others of us that do help serve public entities will have the money to do the functions like educating our children.
I gave you extra time because your name's Sam.
Thank you very much, Sam.
I'll give you extra time because your name is not Sam.
I was going to take it. My name's Bob Bernstein, Southeast Portland resident for 41 years. I moved here from New York. It saddens me that I think that Portland wants to become another New York. And I don't want to have to move again. I'd feel safer. Okay, half the people that have testified here are making money out of it. The other half aren't. It seems to me over the course of my lifetime that if there's money to be made, people will find a way of turning a buck. It bothers me that the job, that the card that's getting played tonight is this jobs card, the same one that gets used, and I'm not a bit of hyperbole here, about strip mining or continued drilling in the Gulf. If this committee was constituted slightly differently, it would have been 50-50 or to the other side of things. As it was, it's just 57-43 when you break it down to percents. So a lot of this comes down to the constitution of how that committee was made up. And I'm not sure that if the voters really had a say about this, I mean, it's easy to marshal people by playing a jobs card. But there's other people that could be marshaled also. And it's hard to know in 10 years jobs may not be as critically needed. But you're going to sell away something that should be safeguarded for our children.
I give you an extra 43 seconds.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
I would have taken it anyway.
Anybody else unique? all right. These three and ma'am in the back. Yes. And then we are done with testimony. I think, yes. Thank you all for hanging in there and for those of you that are still in the chamber.
Thank you. My name's Lori Wall. I represent Inland Sea Maritime Group. They own the property one lot removed from the port property on Hayden Island. Their address is 3255 North Hayden Island Drive. It's the location of Schooner Creek Boat Works. They build and repair boats. We support the resolution because we need high-wage jobs. We think that high-wage jobs can coexist with conservation areas. The current port-owned property on West Hayden Island, and this is a point that has not been brought up, invites homeless people to live there. There's also a problem with garbage. Many homeless people reside on West Hayden Island and degrade my client's property and the business environment on Hayden Island.
I appreciate your point. Is there any other? That's a good point. Appreciate it. It is a unique point we haven't heard before. Is there any other point?
I think that we need to allow development of this property so that the port can protect and improve the natural areas. And finally, Inland Sea Maritime Group would like to stay involved as this planning process proceeds. Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony. Hi, thanks for waiting.
Hi, I'm Donna Matraza with the Subby Island Conservancy, and I would just like to point out that in the 1996 flood, Subby Island wasn't just slightly underwater. It was so underwater that it made national news, and I had people from around the country calling me to see if I was okay, and we were advised to and evacuated our homes. And so a place like this is not a place for a 300-acre industrial site. Thank you.
Can you leave? Do we have your contact information? I want to make sure I want to contact you about a different, separate issue.
Okay.
Need your advice. <Uh-oh. laughs> Sir.
Hi, my name is Tom Deshane. Tom Deshane. I'm an industrial broker. And one of the main points that I want to make that I didn't hear much at all until the previous staff member was talking, and that is that the if this is developed, 300 acres of marine industrial development, I think the leverage aspect of that can is a giant benefit long-term to the entire metro region. I did not hear that. That leverage effect, you take 300 acres, and the businesses, we're a small business community, and those small businesses, if they have the capacity to ship, I didn't hear that, and I wanted to make that point.
Appreciate the leverage point. Appreciate it. Sir, you get the last word.
Yes, my name is Ted Labby. I live in North Portland, and I commute daily across the bridge to work in Washington State as a biologist. And I just want to—I didn't hear enough about the regional port facilities we have and the one economy that exists. And I want to tell you that there is an abundance of port facilities on the Washington side. And I don't think that, you know, I don't think this parochial view that we're taking of just focusing on what we need right here is considering the wider regional economy. More port jobs, more industrial development jobs on the Washington side would remedy the inequity of jobs versus housing that we have that's creating the whole Columbia River crossing maelstrom that we have. So I think this really parochial approach is killing us on a big transportation infrastructure issue that, you know, has barely come into the conversation.
Appreciate your testimony. Appreciate you all for hanging in there. All right, that gets us to a vote. Carla, would you please call the vote?
Want to do the report first, or?
Let's do the first one on the agenda. So there'll be two votes. So let's do 1100 first.
Do you want a motion to accept the report?
So moved.
Second. Boomed and seconded to accept the report. Can you please call the vote on Council Item 1100?
Saltzman?
Well, thanks to the members of the working group for taking on a tremendously difficult task. Aye.
Fritz?
This has been a huge amount of work, and thank you, Ann Squire, for your leadership of the committee and for working through some very difficult issues and providing us with a lot of information on which to make our decision. Thank you, everybody who participated in that process, especially those of you who have been participating for over 10 years, and we greatly appreciate it. Aye.
Fish.
I also want to acknowledge Ann Squire, the chair, who led this process through 17 months and many meetings, and thank you for the time you spent with me, helping me understand the issue. Thanks to your committee members. Sam, I want to acknowledge the staff that's done yeoman's work on this and has had to keep five different people in this building up to speed on very complicated issues. I want to thank all the members of the public who came out tonight and testified. I don't remember an evening in which there was better and more informed testimony on any issue, and so I deeply appreciate people taking their time. I'm going to support the resolution because what, as amended, what we have, what we are agreeing to is a roadmap for the second phase of analysis. This vote does not call the question on whether we will go forward with annexation. It does not call the question on whether we will develop in any particular way. But it does say that we believe there's a basis for going forward to a second phase. A sustainable community is a community that has both jobs and a healthy environment. And where that line is a point of contention, and it should always be a point of contention, because we only get to the right place by looking at this from all sides and making our best judgment. Based on everything I've heard, I believe there is a chance that we can get the right mix. I compliment the mayor in the process that he has led to get us to this point. And as to those who have argued that the natural area piece is the great legacy piece of this debate, I would say that I agree. And if it's 500 acres that is ultimately set aside as a natural area, my commitment and the marker that I've put down in this process is that we look seriously at different ownership models, not to impugn the port in terms of its stewardship, but to explore different models. And that we find a way, once and for all, to fix the operations side of the equation, which we have been consistently falling down on, which is how we maintain our natural areas. It does not serve our cause to keep adding to our inventory of natural area if we cannot maintain it properly. Mayor Adams, thank you for your leadership on this. I'm voting aye.
Adams.
Aye.
Saltzman.
This is on the resolution, right? Okay. Well, I want to thank everybody for their testimony tonight, thank the mayor and everybody who's worked so hard on this issue. I think what this is a judgment call, and I guess that's what we're all up here to do, is to offer our best judgment based on the testimony, based on evidence, and based on ultimately gut instincts and what we think is best for the citizens of our city and our region on a more larger note. And I do think that the resolution, particularly with the amendments that do tighten down the 300 acres to really mean 300 acres, and I think the council is solid in that commitment, that this will drive some of the more efficient land use, some of the more innovative ways to handle larger trains that I know that people like Bob Salinger, who served on the committee, have raised with me in meetings about a seemingly inefficient use of port land and, especially compared to European cities, more innovative ways to handle large trains. I think by setting the limit at 300 acres, meaning 300 acres, we're going to drive the port to be more efficient if this is going to, in fact, pencil out. And that is the big question, too, that remains in the future. We may take an action here today, but it doesn't mean anything in terms of the ultimate development of West Haden Island at this point. I particularly pay reference to some of the concerns raised by federal agencies, state agencies, around biological impacts on the lower Columbia, the NEPA process that remains ahead of us, and fundamentally a market. This has to be driven by a market. And while we can argue about whether it's 300 jobs or 1,200 jobs 10 years from now, I mean, ultimately those figures are meaningless. None of us are going to be held accountable to those numbers. I think what we are going to be held accountable to is whether we exercise the right instinct and balance here. And I think my instinct tells me that, you know, we need to be laying, just as we plan for open space needs in our future, we need to be doing the same to plan for good-paying jobs in the future, good-paying middle-class jobs. As Portland increasingly, in some respects, becomes a city of retirees and of younger people, I think what's often neglected is it's a city where a lot of people still earn good-paying jobs on our waterfront and in our industrial areas. And that's as important to plan for as it is to plan for our natural area needs. I think this does strike the balance. I think 500 acres is 500 acres of open space that no matter how we use it, whether it's used for mitigation purposes, whether it becomes part of a metro or city open space network, I'm determined to see that it remains intact and protects the biological diversity of our region. But part of that biological diversity is the humans in the region, too, and we need to make sure that those needs are accommodated. And I think this does strike a good balance and holds the port's feet to the fire to make this work as efficiently as possible, preserving as much for open space as possible. So again, thanks to the mayor and all the staff who've worked on this, and I'm pleased to vote aye.
Fritz.
This is from the resolution. Nothing in this resolution constitutes a final decision concerning any land use planning action with respect to West Haden Island. So this outlines the steps forward. The mayor and I proposed amendments, which were supported by the whole council, that helped define the paths forward and make much more explicit what we want to accomplish if we move forward and what the process will be to move forward. The resolution now requires that there be more analysis of cost and benefits, and cost and benefits to the public, as well as cost and benefits to endangered species and to the residents of East Haden Island. It requires that there will be more analysis of land supply and state and federal requirements, and that all development, if it does occur, will occur within the 300 acres. It requires more evaluation of air quality and impacts for East Hayden Island residents and requires the evaluation of efforts to look after our endangered species. This is a valuable economic asset. I am not yet convinced that the costs of developing the site as a marine terminal outweigh its environmental, recreation, and open space values. Doing what's right is what is our city's mantra for sustainable development, and it often costs us more than doing what is wrong. This council has demonstrated over and over that we are willing to pay to do the right thing for the Climate Action Plan and for other goals that our citizens value. And we will consider in this ongoing process that it might cost us more to preserve the property for the long term, sustainable payback to the city, much like how we invest large amounts of money in our other city infrastructure, such as light rail, solar, city fleet, sustainability center, a whole bunch of other things that the council either has done or is considering would be worth that public investment. We know from our experience with parks and schools development that citizens believe the intrinsic community values for these assets far outweigh the economic value that those assets would represent to the citizens of Portland, which is why the resolution now requires the cost-benefit analysis for the public as well as the previous economic studies. I do support the arguments for jobs. I want to see more jobs in our city, no question. In that vein, I'm interested in having more information about the redevelopment potential associated with other river-related industrial lands in the city to see if there is equal or better potential there. We need to make good use of existing infrastructure and provide more support to existing industrial businesses, and we must examine whether the amount of public subsidy that would be required to make this development work might be better spent in other industrial areas, including in the North Reach and in the harbor. I understand that the preliminary reports and information from the Port of Portland seem to indicate that finding parcels big enough to accommodate the types of future freight needs make this site more ideal in this regard, but I don't. The testimony from the Western Economic Alliance was interesting to me because, indeed, we have in the metro urban growth boundary discussions made it very clear that we in Portland are willing to invest in brownfields rather than expand onto greenfields. I think that question comes into play on this site as well, and that's why I asked for more evaluation. Efficiency and sustainability should and must be examined, and that's what this resolution does. It doesn't lock us into annexation, and because of that fact, I am very happy to support the resolution. I look forward to a robust discussion with the community and the council regarding the costs and benefits to the public of annexing this property. I'm very, very grateful to all of you for your input provided. Some of this speech was written out beforehand, and there's a lot of different scribbles on it that's been informed throughout the discussion tonight. And indeed, the amendments were informed by the hundreds of emails that we have received, and I think that it greatly improved that. So I thank Tom Bazell, my chief of staff, who worked with Amy Ruiz in the mayor's office to provide the amendments. Also, Ann Bayer, the director of the Office of Healthy Working Rivers, and Patty Howard, my rivers liaison, who have worked tirelessly on this, as have staff from the Bureau of Environmental Services and the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. Thank you, Mayor Adams, for your leadership. Thank you again for allowing me to partner with you in teasing out these important questions and figuring out a way forward that I think will get us to the right decision in the end. Aye.
Fish.
This is the second late evening of hearings we've had, so I want to acknowledge Carla, our clerk, who's done a marvelous job.
You can clap.
She keeps us on task.
She has to put up with us.
Does a wonderful job. I want to also acknowledge Sonia Schmansky on my staff, who has worked really hard and helped me. thank you. To Sonia. Hopefully her parents are watching. The amendments we adopted at the beginning of the proceeding tonight incorporated a lot of the ideas that we have as a council received from you, the public, about this process. So I want to thank the mayor and Commissioner Fritz for providing an amended resolution which addressed many of the concerns that had been raised prior to this hearing and frankly set the bar higher for our proceedings going forward. And as proof that Amanda and I are spending too much time together, my final comment was I look forward to a robust discussion about this which happens to be exactly what she said in her closing. So I'm going to stop there. Thank you all. Aye.
Adams.
I have to read. I'm reading my comments because it's late at night. We've had a long week and still recovering from strep throat. Before I do, I want to thank and acknowledge Amy Ruiz on my planning and sustainability team for her hard work with the great team at the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability and the Bureau of Environmental Services. And again, thanks to our committee chaired by Ms. Squire. I believe there's real potential and demonstrated need for both a world-class habitat and a port facility on West Hayden Island. But I know much work and much more due diligence remains to be done. In 2009, I asked the working group to consider the future of Hayden Island. Specifically, their charge was to advise the City Council on how marine industrial habitat and recreational uses might be reconciled on West Hayden Island, and if they determined that a mix of uses was possible, to recommend a preferred concept plan. They met and worked very hard and thoughtfully. And while they remain divided on the question posed to them, I want to reiterate my thanks to every single member. In particular, I believe the principles and points of the agreement that they have outlined in their report can be a starting point for further productive discussion about the future of West Hayden Island. After considering their report and the foundation studies, I have recommended, as you know, that the city continue planning for the future of West Hayden Island, subject to strict parameters, as you have mentioned, as has been mentioned, 500 and 300 in terms of designations for environmental and a deep water marine terminal. Any docks that are designed to service this potential marine terminal should be designed to avoid the shallow water impacts and minimize negative impacts. It should not include a vertical seawall or similar structure. Nature-based recreational uses should be evaluated in more detail, and particularly if recreational improvements can be used as a means to direct and manage human access in ways that support habitat objectives. I intend to be pretty tough on potential recreational uses of West Hayden Island in terms of what we will allow. Traffic impacts should be examined in the light of the most up-to-date Columbia River crossing design options, and I intend to work, regardless of what we do in the future, to improve transportation access and minimize truck impacts to East Hayden Island. Under Oregon land use law, city and regional planners have a responsibility for monitoring the supply of develop-ready land, ensuring enough supply exists to satisfy the expected needs over the next 20 years. We all work under a state-mandated comprehensive plan, which we are currently updating through the Portland plan. And it is important as we move forward in terms of doing our due diligence on a potential co-use of West Hayden Island, that we keep the regional picture in mind. As I said to a reporter who knows that I have been tough on the regional discussions about urban growth boundaries, I've got to look the mayor of Hillsborough in the eye and say we're doing our part. Our part, though, has to be the most innovative and creative co-use possible for West Hayden Island. I want to thank the members, my colleagues on the City Council, for, their, as always, their very thoughtful interaction with my staff and myself in bringing this forward. Especially want to underscore my thanks to Commissioner Amanda Fritz, who was on the Planning Commission for 57 years. How long?
Seven.
7 years. It just feels like 57 years. But most of all, tonight, I want to thank the testimony that we received in this chamber tonight. This was very thoughtful, very passionate testimony, gave us new questions to think about, gave us important points to consider and to underscore. And you put a human face on the issue. So thank you. Aye. It is approved. We are adjourned. Oh, 10 o'clock. Thank you. Good job.
Look at our seat. I'm not going to touch your hand.
Oh, that's true.
And if we got out of here. Okay.
Thank you.